He was a distinguished neurologist, master of Pembroke College at the University of Oxford in England before his retirement in 1993. Now he is age 84, and he considers his proudest accomplishments to be those arising from his work as a neurologist, including his contributions to academic medicine. But he is best known for a feat that he accomplished some 50 years ago, back in 1954. On May the 6th of 1954, Roger Bannister became the first individual to run the 1 mile race in less than 4 minutes. It was a feat that many thought was impossible. And you know what the interesting thing about that is? He only held his world record for 46 days, because once Roger Bannister demonstrated that it was possible, since then hundreds of people have duplicated his feat and even exceeded his performance. It's such a powerful example, isn't it, of how self-imposed limitations melt away and belief in what is possible begins to grow as soon as one courageous soul breaks through and does what others say can't be done. Now, I'm not up here this evening just to talk about Roger Bannister, because the fact is there's a particular example of this in the Old Testament that I want to begin our lesson sharing with you, and I find it particularly compelling. It's an event that took place in the life of King David in the book of 2 Samuel. Connor read from 1 Samuel. We're going to begin in 2 Samuel. I want you to go to chapter 21, please. 2 Samuel, chapter 21. There we go. We put that text up on the slide. Now, keeping in mind what Connor read, I want you to read this text with me. We're going to begin with verse 15, and I want you to see if anything sticks out to you as we read through this. 2 Samuel, chapter 21, and verse 15. And Connor, you'll be thankful I didn't give you this passage. There are some names I've been practicing all afternoon. There was war again, verse 15, between the Philistines and Israel. And David went down together with his servants, and they fought against the Philistines. And David grew weary. And Ishbi-Benob, one of the descendants of the giants, whose spear weighed 300 shekels of bronze, and who was armed with a new sword, thought to kill David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and attacked the Philistine and killed him. Then David's men swore to him, "You shall no longer go out with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel." After this, there was war again with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sibbecai the Hushathite struck down Saph, who was one of the descendants of the giants. And there was again war with the Philistines at Gob. And Elhanan, the son of Jaara-Oregim, that was the worst one, the Bethlehemite, struck down Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was again war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature who had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in number, and he was also descended from the giants. And when he taunted Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimei, David's brother, struck him down. These 4 were descended from the giants in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. That text gives you goosebumps. You know, whenever I read that, I can't help but be impressed with just how different the people of Israel acted under David's leadership than they acted under Saul's. Remember how the men of Israel behaved in the time of Saul? We just heard it read. When faced with the prospect of fighting against a Philistine giant who taunted God and its armies, twice, at least in 1 Samuel 17, it says that they turned tail and fled. They ran. They didn't want to have anything to do with this giant. David was the lone individual who refused to cower in fear. He faced the giant. Everyone else thought it was impossible. With God's help, he defeated him. And Israel learned a very valuable lesson that day, that God is bigger than the giants. David's actions gave the people around him confidence. Under David's leadership, the Israelites, I believe, exhibited a much greater degree of faith in God and a much greater courage to battle the enemies of God. And here now in 2 Samuel 21, in the later years of David's reign, we can read in 8 short verses of no less than 4 Philistine giants being slain by 4 different men in David's army. David's men follow the cue of their leader. The power of one's example to influence others for good is clearly demonstrated in this text, and it's an important reminder to us of how impactful our lives can be. Demonstrated courage and faith on our part can so encourage others around us that they are stirred to seek greater spirituality. Our actions might not be as dramatic and visible to a wide array of people as was David's slaying of Goliath. In fact, Jesus in Matthew chapter 5 said that in many respects we may just fly under the radar. He compared our influence to 2 items in Matthew 5 verses 13 through 16. You remember what they are? Salt and light. Listen, I bet you didn't sit around today and brag about the salt at the dinner table, depending on what you had. And yet we can't live without the salt, or so it seems. It's there in everything, and it brings out the best in everything that we eat. And just a little bit of light, ladies and gentlemen, can chase the thickest of darkness away. If you've ever been in a cave and seen what the tour guide does in that regard, you know what I'm talking about. Everyday active faith that overcomes when no one may think it's possible is faith, ladies and gentlemen, that has the power to inspire others and ultimately to give them the encouragement they need to serve God. And I'm saying to us this evening, to you and to me, you can be that person. In our lesson tonight, we want to consider 3 different areas of our lives in which the example of faith we set can make all the difference in whether others around us serve God or not. Consider the importance of strong faith that inspires when it comes to developing leaders. And certainly this applies within the church. Noted leadership expert John Maxwell made these observations concerning the positive influence that David had on his men here in the text that we just read. He said of David, and regarding David, number one, it takes one to know one. That's true, isn't it? Secondly, he said it takes one to show one. How could David show them courage, or how could David teach them courage? By showing it to them. And number three, it takes one to grow one. Leaders are not grown by non-leaders. Leaders learn leadership from other leaders, including learning how to navigate the many difficult challenges that leaders face. It's the way men learn how to be elders, the way men learn how to be deacons. It's the way that other men learn how to preach and to do the work of evangelism, is by taking the cue that they see from other leaders. I would refer you to Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1, notice the impact that Paul's example had on others with regard to the spread of the gospel. Philippians chapter 1, we're going to begin in verse number 12. Here the Apostle Paul says in Philippians 1 verse 12, I want you to know, brethren, and I'm reading tonight from the English Standard Version, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. Now notice, and most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment. You see where they got their confidence from? They got it from the Apostle Paul's example. And notice, he says they're much more bold to speak the word without fear. People learn how to do evangelistic work by watching others do evangelistic work. And people, as I said earlier, learn how to preach by watching others, observing them. 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, where the Apostle Paul instructs Timothy to engage in this mentor relationship, the same kind of relationship from which Timothy derived his benefit. Timothy was mentored by Paul, and Paul now says to Timothy, essentially, pay it forward. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, he says, and what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. Now, before you think that this point isn't for you, You say, well, Mark's just talking about elders and deacons and preachers and that sort of thing. Let me remind us that all of us lead in certain ways. Because what leadership really boils down to is influence. And since all of us have influence, then all of us on different levels lead in different ways. If you teach a children's Bible class, you have influence. You lead. And in fact, you possess a unique opportunity to show the kids that you teach how to be a Bible class teacher and how to live as a Christian. Now, they, of course, do not yet appreciate just how involved and sometimes just how flat out hard it can be to put together a Bible class, especially when life outside is pretty busy, in fact, even crazy at times. But your example is planting seeds in their heart, and it will help them later on. In fact, your example can even help them in the short term with their very busy lives. They know you're busy and they see you showing up, prepare, listen, that sends a value message to them. And they're inspired and they're built up. If you're an elderly member in this church, you lead. In fact, you have lots of influence. It's probably not said enough from this pulpit, but you're showing up to services despite the fact that it may have taken hours and maybe very exhausting to get ready to come here. I want to say that sends a very strong message to the rest of us. That wields influence. It's been the case many times, seeing one of you make it to services has just built me up so much and helped my attitude that day, helped me to complain less and to be more grateful. And I'm looking out across the crowd tonight and I'm seeing several for whom I am thankful that you're even here. That's faith that inspires. Active faith in the lives of Christians has the power to lead, has the great power to inspire and to develop leaders around them. Well, there's another area in which faith can inspire, and that is certainly in the area of battling trials and temptations. I said a moment ago that our actions might not be as dramatic as the slaying of a giant. In other words, the manifestation of our faith may not happen in very grand, noble ways, and yet there are, if we think about it, certainly giants of various kinds, are there not, which we face today? Many of them take on the form of different trials and temptations that wage war against our souls and which in the eyes of others around us may seem insurmountable. Maybe the daily battle one fights against some recurring, nagging temptation. It may be the indescribable pain and heartache that comes with the loss of a loved one. It may be the sudden onset of a major financial crisis. And as we know, the battle against these giants is not necessarily fought in public. It's not fought in front of a lot of other people. In fact, these battles are fought often in the privacy of one's home, in the alone moments. The waves of grief or the intensity of the temptation may be so high and formidable and great that at times maybe you wish you could just exchange your trial for a date on the field with a Philistine giant. That might just at times seem easier. But I believe that while it may not be our primary objective to inspire others in those circumstances, I will say to us the way that each of us deals with that kind of adversity has tremendous power to inspire confidence in others. We've just had no small number of our membership suffer the loss of a spouse, suffer the loss of a parent. And for some of you, it's been several years now since those things happened in your lives. And I'll tell you, I just can't imagine what that's like. My day's coming, but for now, I can't really understand what that feels like. But I can tell you this much, your example of faith inspires the rest of us. It sets an example for us. In fact, I dare say your example has provided on many cases that none of us know about, much needed encouragement to others who've had to walk in your footsteps, who maybe fell into that in the same way that you did, unexpectedly. And through your example, others who lose loved ones have someone to look to for encouragement as an example to follow. Go in your Bibles to 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3, the Apostle Paul reminds Timothy of the example that he had seen. He's exhorted and encouraged to follow in his steps. 2 Timothy 3, verses 10 and 11. Paul writes, "You, however, have followed my teaching, my conduct, my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfastness." You see, there's so much built into each one of these words, isn't there? There are stories to be told in the life of the Apostle Paul for each one of these words. Verse 11, "My persecutions and sufferings that happened to me at Antioch, at Iconium, and at Lystra, which persecutions I endured, yet from them all the Lord rescued me." Kids, I want to speak on your behalf to the rest of the church by saying that our kids need good role models within this congregation, and I believe that they have them. And I want you to feel confident about that. I want you to understand just how necessary the example you set is. We have a sister here who's been trying to quit smoking. I hadn't planned on putting this in the lesson, but she told me something this morning. She said that even though some in her family haven't stopped, she has not smoked in several weeks. That's so encouraging. And that ought to encourage us, brethren. That sort of example is what we're talking about, that has the power to inspire others to do the same. I hope that you will be equally as determined to defeat some giant of temptation in your life. Maybe it's an anger management problem. Maybe your problem isn't smoking. Maybe it's a problem controlling your anger. Maybe you're kind of a hothead. Or maybe you're battling the cancer of bitterness. And I will say to us, younger eyes are watching and they need our example. And that example is powerful. Let's be clear, the power to defeat our giants ultimately comes from who? It comes from God, doesn't it? But when we employ that power from God through His Word, we encourage others to tap into it as well. In fact, you may so encourage and strengthen someone else's faith. You know what may happen? Someday that person that you have strengthened may be the one who comes around and rescues you and pays it forward. In fact, go back to 2 Samuel chapter 21. Did you pick up on that in the text? David set an example for all of those men, but did you read in that text? David kind of was in dire straits, wasn't he? One of the Philistines was about to kill him. Wouldn't that have just made the Philistines joyous? Their longtime enemy is finally defeated. What rewards that fellow would have received? But in 2 Samuel chapter 21 and verse 16, we read of Ishbi-Benob, one of the descendants of the giants, the one coming to kill David. But then verse 17, Abishai, the son of Zariah, came to his aid and attacked the Philistine and killed him. Maybe very well that the people that we encourage today will be there to encourage us and help us tomorrow, and maybe even, as Jude said, snatch us out of the fire. But one final area we want to consider tonight in which faith can inspire concerns the raising of children. I hear people say a lot that it's just getting harder and harder to raise children in today's world. Not sure how to react to that because I have a very limited perspective. I have only raised children in today's world. But when I hear that from older generations, I'll tell you what, that makes my antennae go up. That makes me a little bit concerned. In fact, to some people, it may seem to be such a daunting task, they wonder whether or not it's even possible to raise godly offspring in such a world of corruption. There's another giant. When you consider how deep and vast the sea of information, entertainment options truly are, you think about just how many opportunities Satan has to turn our children's hearts away from the Lord. It can seem at times a very impossible task that we face as parents today. And so then, how encouraging, how inspiring then to see godly parents who have either already raised their children and demonstrated that it can be done, or to see parents that are presently raising their children and showing that it can be done and experiencing success. Now again, it may not be our primary, in fact it is not, our primary objective in raising our children to encourage others. Our primary objective in our child rearing is to raise our children, Ephesians 6 verse 4, in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. However, having said that, our example does nonetheless have great power to influence others for good or bad. People are watching. And our stick-to-itiveness, yes, that's a word in the dictionary, our stick-to-itiveness certainly wields influence. Of course, the greater application along these lines is to the parent-child relationship itself. And this is where it gets very sobering for me to pause and think about. My kids are depending on my example. Dads, will you let that thought sink in? That's a very weighty thought, isn't it? My kids see me overcoming the stresses of everyday life to make sure that I am making time for regular time with God. I'll tell you, they're going to have much more courage to do the same. If they see me grow out of the character faults I have, my kids know what they are. Talk with them for 5 minutes. You'll find out what they are. If they can see me growing out of those, guess what? They're going to see how that's done, and they're going to be encouraged to do the same. If they see me living with Rachel in an understanding way and demonstrating selfless love, they're going to be encouraged to do the same thing someday when their marriages hit a rough patch or two. We need to take this to heart. The fact that our kids see the good things that we do. They see the bad things. But they see the good things that we do for the Lord and for our families. Lois and Eunice are two of the unsung heroes of the Bible. And I'm going to 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse number 5, because before the Apostle Paul ever met Timothy, Timothy had a faith in the Lord. Anyone familiar with the story of Timothy know exactly where that faith was learned, where Timothy was inspired to serve God. And that was from the example he saw in his mother and in his grandmother. 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5, I am reminded of your sincere faith. By the way, kids, no greater compliment that someone could give you. Here's a young man, and Paul says he's praising him for his sincere faith. That's something to shoot for always. Paul says, I'm reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that dwelt first, parents underline that dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and now I am sure dwells in you as well. Faith that inspires. We all have the capacity for that. And hopefully this lesson will encourage you to go out this week and to live a life that will please God, understanding the influence that we have is powerful. And whether we know it or not, our example may very well inspire someone else. Maybe even years from now, they'll think back and remember you, and they'll glorify God, and that'll be wonderful. Well, as we get ready to sing the invitation song, let me talk to those of you who've been thinking about becoming Christians. Maybe you aren't sure you can be what God expects. And what I would say to you is to just take a look around here. You certainly can be what God expects. Being a Christian is a growth process. And in that process, you very, very well may encourage others around you to grow. Just as you look around and you see others that encourage you to grow, as you grow in your faith, and you will, you can encourage others around you to do the same. Your example, in fact, what you do right now regarding the invitation may very well spark obedience in others. Now, hopefully that's not the primary reason why your friends obey the gospel, but there's no doubt about the fact that your obedience sets an example for others. We would encourage you first and foremost to be obedient to the Lord. Obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. If you don't do that, you can't set any good example at all. But everything's ready to help you become a Christian tonight. Don't serve the devil one day longer. Become a Christian right now. If you're a Christian, you haven't been walking as you should, and you need our prayers, we invite you to come as well as we stand and sing.